Chapter 115. Winter carried it through the changing season, saw it bud, saw it blossom, saw it bear fruit, saw the fruit ripen, in short, cultivated the tree in that diligent and minute manner before it got out of the bedroom window to steal the fruit, that many thanks had been offered up by belated listeners for the trees having been planted and grafted prior to Lord Decimus's time. Bar's interest in apples was so overtopped by the rapt suspense in which he pursued the changes of these pears, from the moment when Lord Decimus solemnly opened with your mentioning pears recalls to my remembrance a pear tree, apostrophe down to the rich conclusion, and so we pass, through the various changes of life, from eaten pears to parliamentary pears, apostrophe that he had to go downstairs with Lord Decimus, and even then to be seated next to him at table in order that he might hear the anecdote out. By that time, Barr felt that he had secured the foreman, and might go to dinner with a good appetite. It was a dinner to provoke an appetite, though he had not had one. The rarest dishes, sumptuously cooked and sumptuously served, the choicest fruits, the most exquisite wines, marvels of workmanship in gold and silver, china and glass, innumerable things delicious to the senses of taste, smell, and sight, were insinuated into its composition. Oh, what a wonderful man this Myrtle, what a great man, what a master man, how blessedly and enviably endowed, in one word, what a rich man! He took his usual poor teenpenny worth of food in his usual indigestive way, and had as little to say for himself as ever a wonderful man had. Fortunately, Lord Decimus was one of those sublimities who have no occasion to be talked to, for they can be at any time sufficiently occupied with the contemplation of their own greatness. This enabled the bashful young member to keep his eyes open long enough at a time to see his dinner. But, whenever Lord Decimus spoke, he shut them again. The agreeable young Barnacle and Barr were the talkers of the party. Bishop would have been exceedingly agreeable also, but that his innocence stood in his way. He was so soon left behind. When there was any little hint of anything being in the wind, he got lost directly. Worldly affairs were too much for him. He couldn't make them out at all. This was observable when Barr said, incidentally, that he was happy to have heard that we were soon to have the advantage of enlisting on the good side, the sound and plain sagacity not demonstrative or ostentatious, but thoroughly sound and practical of our friend Mr. Sparkler. Ferdinand Barnacle laughed, and said oh yes, he believed so. A vote was a vote, and all was acceptable. Barr was sorry to miss our good friend Mr. Sparkler today, Mr. Myrtle. He is away with Mrs. Myrtle, apostrophe returned that gentleman, slowly coming out of a long abstraction, in the course of which he had been fitting a tablespoon up his sleeve. It is not indispensable for him to be on the spot. Apostrophe, the magic name of Myrtle, apostrophe said Barr, with the jury droop, no doubt will suffice for all. Apostrophe, why yes I believe so, apostrophe assented Mr. Myrtle, putting the spoon aside, and clumsily hiding each of his hands in the coat cuff of the other hand. I believe the people in my interest down there will not make any difficulty. Apostrophe, model people. Apostrophe, apostrophe said Barr. I am glad you approve of them, apostrophe said Mr. Myrtle. And the people of those other two places, now, apostrophe pursued Barr, with a bright twinkle in his keen eye, as it slightly turned in the direction of his magnificent neighbor. We lawyers are always curious, always inquisitive, always picking up odds and ends for our patchwork minds, since there is no knowing when and where they may fit into some corner. The people of those other two places now? Do they yield so laudably to the vast and cumulative influence of such enterprise and such renown? Do those little rills become absorbed so quietly and easily, and, as it were by the influence of natural laws, so beautifully, in the swoop of the majestic stream as it flows upon its wondrous way enriching the surrounding lands, that their course is perfectly to be calculated, and distinctly to be predicated? apostrophe apostrophe, Mr. Myrtle, a little troubled by Barr's eloquence, looked fitfully about the nearest salt cellar for some moments, and then said hesitating, "They are perfectly aware, sir, of their duty to society. They will return anybody I send to them for that purpose." Apostrophe, cheering to know, apostrophe, said Barr. Cheering to know. Apostrophe, the three places in question were three little rotten holes in this island, containing three little ignorant, drunken, guzzling, dirty, out-of-the-way constituencies, that had reeled into Mr. Myrtle's pocket. Ferdinand Barnacle laughed in his easy way, and airily said they were a nice set of fellows. Bishop, mentally perambulating among paths of peace, was altogether swallowed up in absence of mind. "Pray, apostrophe," asked Lord Decimus, casting his eyes around the table, "what is this story I have heard of a gentleman long confined in a debtor's prison proving to be of a wealthy family, and having come into the inheritance of a large sum of money? I have met with a variety of allusions to it. Do you know anything of it, Ferdinand?" "Apostrophe, apostrophe, I only know this much," apostrophe, said Ferdinand, "that he has given the department with which I have the honor to be associated." Apostrophe, this sparkling young barnacle threw off the phrase sportively, as who should say, "We know all about these forms of speech, but we must keep it up, we must keep the game alive. No end of trouble, and has put us into innumerable fixes." Apostrophe, fixes? Apostrophe, apostrophe, repeated Lord Decimus, with a majestic pausing and pondering on the word, that made the bashful member shut his eyes quite tight. Fixes? Apostrophe, a very perplexing business indeed, apostrophe, observed Mr. Tite Barnacle, with an air of grave resentment. What, apostrophe, said Lord Decimus, was the character of his business? What was the nature of these affixes, Ferdinand? Apostrophe, apostrophe, oh, it's a good story, as a story, apostrophe, returned that gentleman. As good a thing of its kind as need be. This Mr. Dorrit, his name is Dorrit, had incurred a responsibility to us, ages before the fairy came out of the bank, and gave him his fortune, under a bond he had signed for the performance of a contract which was not at all performed. He was a partner in a house in some large way spirits, or buttons, or wine, or blacking, or oatmeal, or woolen, or pork, or hooks and eyes, or iron, or treacle, or shoes, or something or other that was wanted for troops, or seamen, or somebody, and the house burst, and we being among the creditors, detainees were lodged on the part of the crown in a scientific manner, and all the rest of it. When the fairy had appeared, and he wanted to pay us off, egad, we had got into such an exemplary state of checking and counter-checking, signing and counter-signing, that it was 6 months before we knew how to take the money, or how to give a receipt for it. It was a triumph of public business, apostrophe, said this handsome young barnacle, laughing heartily, "You never saw such a lot of forms in your life." "Why," the attorney said to me one day, "if I wanted this office, to give me £2,000 or £3,000 instead of take it, I couldn't have more trouble about it." "You are right, old fellow," I told him, "and in future you'll know that we have something to do here." Apostrophe, the pleasant young barnacle finished by once more laughing heartily. He was a very easy, pleasant fellow indeed, and his manners were exceedingly winning. Mr. Tite Barnacle's view of the business was of a less airy character. He took it ill that Mr. Dorrit had troubled the department by wanting to pay the money, and considered it a grossly informal thing to do after so many years. But Mr. Tite Barnacle was a buttoned-up man, and consequently a weighty one. All buttoned-up men are weighty. All buttoned-up men are believed in. Whether or no, the reserved and never exercised power of unbuttoning fascinates mankind. Whether or no, wisdom is supposed to condense and augment when buttoned up, and to evaporate when unbuttoned, it is certain that the man to whom importance is accorded is the buttoned-up man. Mr. Tite Barnacle never would have passed for half his current value unless his coat had been always buttoned up to his white cravat. May I ask, apostrophe said Lord Decimus, if Mr. Derrida Dorrit has any family? Apostrophe apostrophe, nobody else replying, the host said, he has two daughters, my lord. Apostrophe, oh, you are acquainted with him? Apostrophe asked Lord Decimus. Mrs. Myrtle is. Mr. Sparkler is too. In fact, apostrophe said Mr. Myrtle, I rather believe that one of the young ladies has made an impression on Edmund Sparkler. He is susceptible, and I think the conquest apostrophe here Mr. Myrtle stopped, and looked at the tablecloth, as he usually did, when he found himself observed or listened to. Barr was uncommonly pleased to find that the Myrtle family, and this family, had already been brought into contact. He submitted, in a low voice across the table to Bishop, that it was a kind of analogical illustration of those physical laws, in virtue of which like flies to like. He regarded this power of attraction in wealth, to draw wealth to it, as something remarkably interesting and curious, something indefinably allied to the lodestone and gravitation. Bishop, who had ambled back to earth again, when the present theme was broached, acquiesced. He said it was indeed highly important to society that one in the trying situation of unexpectedly finding himself invested with a power for good or for evil in society should become, as it were, merged in the superior power of a more legitimate and more gigantic growth, the influence of which, as in the case of our friend at whose board we sat, was habitually exercised in harmony with the best interests of society. Thus, instead of two rival and contending flames, a larger and a lesser, each burning with a lurid and uncertain glare, we had a blended and a softened light whose genial ray diffused an equable warmth throughout the land. Bishop seemed to like his own way of putting the case very much, and rather dwelt upon it. Barr, meanwhile, not to throw away a juryman, making a show of sitting at his feet and feeding on his precepts. The dinner and dessert being 3 hours long, the bashful member cooled in the shadow of Lord Decimus faster than he warmed with food and drink, and had but a chilly time of it. Lord Decimus, like a tall tower in a flat country, seemed to project himself across the tablecloth, hide the light from the honorable member, cool the honorable member's marrow, and give him a woeful idea of distance. When he asked this unfortunate traveler to take wine, he encompassed his faltering steps with the gloomiest of shades, and when he said, "Your health, sir," apostrophe apostrophe all around him was barrenness and desolation. At length Lord Decimus, with a coffee cup in his hand, began to hover about among the pictures, and to cause an interesting speculation to arise in all minds, as to the probabilities of his ceasing to hover, and enabling the smaller birds to flutter upstairs, which could not be done until he had urged his noble pinions in that direction. After some delay, and several stretches of his wings which came to nothing, he soared to the drawing rooms. And here a difficulty arose, which always does arise when two people are specially brought together at a dinner, to confer with one another. Everybody except Bishop, who had no suspicion of it, knew perfectly well that this dinner had been eaten and drunk, specifically to the end that Lord Decimus and Mr. Myrtle should have 5 minutes' conversation together. The opportunity so elaborately prepared was now arrived, and it seemed from that moment that no mere human ingenuity could so much as get the two chieftains into the same room. Mr. Myrtle and his noble guest persisted in prowling about at opposite ends of the perspective. It was in vain for the engaging Ferdinand to bring Lord Decimus to look at the bronze horses near Mr. Myrtle. Then Mr. Myrtle evaded and wandered away. It was in vain for him to bring Mr. Myrtle to Lord Decimus to tell him the history of the unique Dresden vases. Then Lord Decimus evaded and wandered away, while he was getting his man up to the mark. Did you ever see such a thing as this? Apostrophe apostrophe said Ferdinand to Barr, when he had been baffled 20 times. Often, apostrophe returned Barr. unless I butt one of them into an appointed corner, and you butt the other, apostrophe said Ferdinand, comma, it will not come off after all. Apostrophe, very good, apostrophe said Barr. I'll butt Myrtle, if you like, but not my lord. Apostrophe, Ferdinand laughed, in the midst of his vexation. Confound them both. Apostrophe, apostrophe said he, looking at his watch. I want to get away. Why the deuce can't they come together? They both know what they want, and mean to do. Look at them. Apostrophe, they were still looming at opposite ends of the perspective, each with an absurd pretense of not having the other on his mind, which could not have been more transparently ridiculous, though his real mind had been chalked on his back. Bishop, who had just now made a third with Barr and Ferdinand, but whose innocence had again cut him out of the subject, and washed him in sweet oil, was seen to approach Lord Decimus and glide into conversation. I must get Myrtle's doctor, to catch and secure him, I suppose, apostrophe said Ferdinand. And then I must lay hold of my illustrious kinsman, and decoy him, if I can drag him, if I can't, to the conference. Apostrophe, since you do me the honor, apostrophe said Barr, with his slyest smile, to ask for my poor aid, it shall be yours with the greatest pleasure. I don't think this is to be done by one man. But if you will undertake to pen my lord into that furthest drawing room, where he is now so profoundly engaged, I will undertake to bring our dear Myrtle into the presence, without the possibility of getting away. Apostrophe, done. Apostrophe, apostrophe said Ferdinand. Done. Apostrophe, apostrophe said Barr. Barr was a sight wondrous to behold, and full of matter, when, jauntily waving his double eyeglass by its ribbon, and jauntily drooping to an universe of jurymen, he, in the most accidental manner ever seen, found himself at Mr. Myrtle's shoulder, and embraced that opportunity of mentioning a little point to him, on which he particularly wished to be guided by the light of his practical knowledge. Here he took Mr. Myrtle's arm, and walked him gently away. A banker, whom we would call A. B. advanced a considerable sum of money, which we would call £15,000, to a client or customer of his, whom he would call PQ. Here, as they were getting towards Lord Decimus, he held Mr. Myrtle tight. As a security for the repayment of this advance to PQ, whom we would call a widow lady, there were placed in ABS hands the title deeds of a freehold estate, which we would call Blinkett or Doddles. Now, the point was this. A limited right of felling and lopping in the woods of Blinkett or Doddles lay in the son of PQ then past his majority, and whom we would call 10. Why, but really this was too bad. In the presence of Lord Decimus, to detain the host with chopping our dry chaff of law, was really too bad. Another time. Barr was truly repentant, and would not say another syllable. Would Bishop favor him with half a dozen words?
He had now set Mr. Myrtle down on a couch, side by side with Lord Decimus, and to it they must go, now or never.
Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.